This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.
Good morning. It's reported that Shakyamuni Buddha said on one occasion that all beings, all sentient beings, without exception, have the virtues of the awakened ones, but because of attachments and false views, they don't perceive this. So I don't know how you feel about that, but based on teachings we're familiar with, we might also ask what false view or what attachment could possibly obscure the world of awakening, the blinding light of awakening. So as you sit here, you maybe some candidates occur to you. For instance, well, you see, it's the false view of a permanent self. That's it. Or it's the accumulated karma of obscuration. That's it. Or it's the toxins of greed and anger and confusion. That's it. Or all of the above. Yet Buddha told us that the most important thing is that we sentient beings possess all the virtues of the awakened ones. And when he said, oh, you know, these various obscurations and false views mean that beings, they don't see that. So he said that teaching, which is, I think, in the Avatamsaka Sutra and maybe elsewhere. He said that for the sake of beings who believe that they might have these, the wisdom and virtue of an awakened one, but they can't see it. So, because they can't see it, Buddha presented a teaching that matches their belief that they can't see it. Can't see it means can't see their actual nature. So as we sit here this morning, we also, there's a whole other story about not seeing, which I won't go into, but if we ask ourselves this morning, honestly, what do we think we're lacking? Which, if we had it, everything would be great. Any volunteers?
Money.
Money? That one I wasn't expecting, actually. Well, that's, if so, that's okay, because in some ways money's kind of, it's not so hard to get, you know. So if money is all that stands between us and eternal happiness, we're in pretty good shape. But I'm inclined to doubt that that's the case. A little money helps, because otherwise you're constantly struggling to stay alive.
I thought you were asking what we thought was in the way to being.
Yes, I was asking that.
Oh, by a person who was not seeing that they were an awakened one would be thinking.
Oh. Money. Oh, yeah. Not you necessarily.
No.
Oh, okay.
Right. I mean, sure, at times.
But. Yeah, yeah. Well, possibly. Yes. Money, or the ideal partner or relationship or living situation or job or something. Of course. And periodically, people will manage to get whatever the thing is that they thought they needed, only to find that things haven't changed very much. And they still pass through life with this feeling of lacking something. Jonathan, did you want to?
I was kind of thinking better of it, but I don't know. Well, it's like, I'm wondering about the perspective where it's like, yeah, it's like, don't get your hopes up and think that that one thing is going to completely fulfill your life. But it doesn't mean that it's necessarily bad either.
No, it does not.
Having a loving relationship.
Maybe, absolutely.
I mean, knowing that that's not expecting, I mean, probably not going to get it if you expect all the answers to be there anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But like, having your own house in order, so to speak, and then at least kind of being interested in it doesn't seem like so unwholesome or anything.
No, not at all. The tricky part there, of course, is how to, I guess, acquire whatever it is without succumbing to attachment to it. That's actually the slippery part. Because if it is something really good and you really like it, it's very hard not to sort of sink our claws into it and try to make it stay put, which of course it won't do. So in Zen, one of the ways that the teaching is talked about is, well, the only thing that's really lacking is a kind of a convincing vision of your actual nature. Now, what it will take to convince you actually varies from person to person. And how an apprehension of your actual nature would come to you also varies wildly from person to person. In our particular family, our Zen family, we recommend that we not go hunting for something that we think is a vision of our actual nature. It's recommended that you not go hunting for that. And instead, arrange the body and mind, or the body-mind, in a way that is in accord with your actual nature. And as it happens, we've inherited this practice known as just sitting, which is beautifully in accord with your actual nature. So, to enter the ceremonial space over and over again of sitting in stillness actually immediately reveals to you your original nature. But it does seem that it takes a while for people to come to some appreciation of that. So mostly what how to say it, what obscures our vision isn't actually anything. What we see and hear and taste and touch and smell and think moment by moment reveals the nature of things as they are. And if instead of allowing ourselves to be in harmony with that, we go in search of one version or another of what we think our actual nature must look like, it's apt to be very frustrating and a big waste of time. Some people have resorted to mind-altering substances and sometimes in that process they will get a glimpse of the world from a different point of view. For instance, back in the late 60s, when LSD was plentiful and free, people would take LSD, and the way the world looked while under its influence would sometimes be assumed to be taken for how things actually look. And therefore, if we were really spiritual beings, you know, things would be surrounded by rainbows all the time, and unicorns would stroll down the street, and you know, people would go flying off into the stratosphere, etc. And this became a problem for some folks, because they spent a great deal of time trying to get to the place of rainbows. And of course, there is no such place. There's no such place that is any more spiritual than where we are right now. So this, our, if you like, our ceremony of stillness is what is convincing, finally. And the more our practice of that ceremony is wholehearted, the more our habitual and cramped way of looking at things gives way to reality. And that does not mean, I don't want to disappoint people, but that does not mean that everything we see then has a lovely rainbow around it. Doesn't mean that. In fact, things look exactly as they are. And as they are, one comes to see as profoundly mysterious and ungraspable. Now, whether that is in the course of an emotionally exciting moment, or whether it's simply a quiet kind of noticing, can't be controlled. Every person is different. So even if in our teaching there's you've probably seen the ox herding pictures, and usually the first picture shows this little ox herd person, it says searching everywhere for the ox, high and low, uphill and down dale, through forest, fen, and field. And what we're suggesting, though, is a good way to search for the ox is to let the ox come to you. Now, that may not be the traditional understanding of ox herding picture number one, but you know, if you have a dog, anybody have a dog? You have a dog? Often, you know, if you want your dog to come over to you, if you start by chasing the dog will think, oh, this is fun, and you will be running around the yard for the rest of your life. So, but sometimes it works very well if you simply sit down very quietly, and eventually your little friend will come over and visit you. So we have a practice that, well, maybe you could call inviting the ox. And then, of course, the next ox herding picture is glimpsing the ox. And from my frame of reference, you're glimpsing the ox all the time. So what is it about how we look at things that causes that not to be apparent? If you're trying to listen to some really lovely music and there's a lot of racket around, that makes it kind of difficult. So the lovely music of Dharma, the Buddha's teaching, is constantly playing. Some Buddhists postulate a what they call the Pure Land, where that music is always playing and there is no obscuring racket. But for us, it may feel like the obscuring racket is our constant inner preoccupation and dialogue or monologue, whatever you want to call it. So one way of being attractive to the ox is, as we said, to be rather still. And again, if that is engaged in a wholehearted fashion, the inner racket subsides. And you can find yourself rather suddenly in a place of complete openness. Whether you label it that or not, it's not so important. I might recommend that you not label it. But such moments of reality will come to you, are coming to you. And as that happens, the body-mind is transformed. in a way that is much more profound than, from my point of view, can happen if you're actually trying to transform your body-mind. So I guess I would join some of our ancestors in strongly recommending that we set aside all devices, that we give ourselves this tremendous gift of sitting in stillness, having set aside all preoccupations, all affairs. Let phenomena simply roll on as they do. Don't worry about thoughts. Don't worry about no thoughts either. Sometimes people who practice will, for whatever karmic reason, even without much background, they will stumble into a place of kind of no thoughts, and they will get kind of upset. What happened to my thoughts? I've had this conversation with people in retreat from time to time. My thoughts are gone. Well, good for you. That's really great. Did you notice we're having a perfectly ordinary conversation? So I'm not sure what you mean, your thoughts are gone. What they mean is, it's suddenly very quiet inside, and they don't know how they did that, because, in fact, they didn't do it. It just happened. These moments are transformative. And to the degree that we don't try and go find them and get them and keep them, their transformation is profound. And again, perfectly in accord with reality. So you know that our possibly mythical Chinese ancestor, Bodhidharma, actually, even if he was mythical, there was somebody or somebodies back then who were practicing the Buddha way vigorously. As you may remember, his first disciple, Avika, complained to him and said, teacher, my mind just bugs the shit out of me. I just hate my mind. And Bodhidharma said, oh, well, all right, give it to me and I'll fix it. And there was an embarrassed silence. But Weka, at least for a moment, went looking for his mind. And he realized, I can't find it. Bodhidharma said, that'll be $50, please. I have fixed your mind. And Weka was a committed follower of the way from that moment on. He could just as well have said, well, I know that the world, the universe is a shining place of profound awakening, but it's that vision is obscured. And Bodhidharma could have said, oh yeah, so what obscures it? And Wake, I could have said, well, you know, stuff. And Bodhidharma could have said, oh, yeah, okay, bring me the stuff. We'll get rid of it. And Wake says, oh, wait, I can't find the stuff. And Bodhidharma could have said, just so. So if I do remember a talk I gave at the monastery, and I don't remember what I said, but maybe I said something like, so what do you think about that? And this being the, you know, the place of the real Zen students, about five or six people said something all at once. So I said, could I address these one at a time, please? And one person said, that's too easy. It's too easy to say that, you know, there's nothing obscuring. And I invited that person to, I asked if that person thought that she was really, really, really practicing no obscuration. And she admitted that she was not. So I said, tell you what, why don't you really try that practice? And then come and tell me how it goes. I don't think she ever came and told me how it went, but I hope that she and others, and that all of us, will undertake the practice of no obscuration. Or sitting in stillness. Being nobody, going nowhere. And invite the ox to come and visit you. You know, the ox might sneak up from behind you, and suddenly there'll be a wet nose against your neck, which may startle you, but you won't mind. Sometimes the ox comes and plunks itself down right in front of you. So you can be ready for any of those eventualities without planning for anything. In the meantime, please consider this practice of nothing is obscured. In Zen, you know, they say in the whole universe, throughout the whole universe, it has never been hidden. And then usually someone else comes along and says, ah, but throughout the entire body, there is neither hint or shadow of it. So that is simply another invitation to be embraced by the practice of being nobody, going nowhere. All right, well, here it is, 11 o'clock already. Apparently the fascists are coming to town after all, so be careful out there. Do you have any questions, comments? Yes.
So you're talking about the ox as being beyond spiritual nature?
Something like that.
I was thinking, I always thought the ox was the mind. Like you're searching for the mind and then you find, okay, there's this tangle of thoughts and emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And you find that, and then by, you know, returning to the breath and practicing meditation, you actually tame the mind. That's what I was thinking more. Like I didn't think it had to do with your true nature more. It was actually a metaphor for mind.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's one story.
Okay.
Which you're welcome to tell. I guess I just tell it a little differently.
Okay.
But after all, there is that tradition in Buddhism of sort of mind training.
Right.
But it is kind of illusory. Now, it's a useful illusion, but it is kind of illusory.
Because you can't find it. I mean.
Right. It's like, okay, now I'm going to train my mind. And someone says, okay. Well, tell you what, you can bring me your mind and I'll train it. And then you go, oh, wait, where is it? Maybe I left it in my other jeans.
And then yet they're doing, you know, some of the research and studied on, you know, neurology.
Yes.
When you actually do practice mindfulness,
mm-hmm.
you actually do get more gray matter, for example, in the amygdala, and there is a change in the brain.
Yes. Yes, I remember many, many years ago, Zen Center's second abbot saying, Sazen changes the body on the cellular level.
Mm.
And this is way before any of that research. So
right.
I don't know how he knew that, but he seemed to.
He might have been trying to say something mystical. But
he
yeah.
might have.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's definitely possible to deeply enjoy our life. And it's okay if we do so in a way that acknowledges impermanence. In fact, in order really to enjoy our life, we must acknowledge impermanence. So that means even in the midst of enjoyment, there might be a little bit sad, little autumnal feeling, because this is really nice, but it's going away. Everything's going away. I'm going away, you're going away. Hallelujah.
Except for the fascists, they're not going away.
Well, they are, but they don't know it yet. Yeah. Anything else? It's a lovely warm day out there. Oh, yes?
Should we even try to get rid of obscurities?
Well, bring me an obscurity and let's see if we can get rid of it.
Sorry, my question was, should we even try to get rid of obscurity?
Right, and I'm answering you by saying, well, okay, let's say yes, get rid of obscurities. Why don't, let's have one and see if we can get rid of it. Obscurity. What does an obscurity look like anyway? Thank you very much.